Hello and welcome to this latest edition of the MPFT podcast. My name is Mark Fletcher from the Trust Communications team, and our guests for today's episode are mental health nurses Mike Cooper and Jay Clark. We're working with local authorities, housing associations and voluntary and community organisations in Shropshire and Telford and Wrekin to offer mental health support to people who are sleeping rough or experiencing homelessness. Jade, Mike, how are you both today? Are you all right?
Good, thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you very much for joining today. So people in town centres or on the streets who are sleeping rough or homeless, I think it's fair to say it's a common sight for many. I think it's also fair to say that most of us are guilty of walking by without considering necessarily how and why that person ended up where they are. So Jade, I'll come to you first if I can, by asking if you could start by talking about why you wanted to be part of the work taking place in Shropshire and Telford and Wrekin to support such a vulnerable group of people.
Yeah, I mean, I think I wanted to be part of it. I mean, it is amazing work that's happening because I felt along with the task force that we work with, we could make such a positive difference to some of, like you said, the most vulnerable people in society whose needs can sometimes be more than others. And I think, unfortunately, sometimes rough sleepers have been forgotten about or don't readily have available the access to services, care and support that others may have. So being a part of that team can be such a humbling experience. And for myself, I wanted to be part of something that can potentially change so many people's life circumstances and provide that positivity to others who are seen as, like I said, forgotten about. We're all guilty of walking past in the street sometimes. And having an understanding now of how people can be in that situation, what's happened in their lives. And I think most importantly, remembering that this can potentially happen to any of us. So to be there at the point when somebody's feeling their worst and being able to make a difference, no matter how big or small, is such a great experience for me and hopefully for the service users also.
And Mike, based on what Jay's just said there, does that chime with yourself?
Yeah, totally, sort of agree with that. Yeah, we're in a very sort of privileged position, myself and Jade, to be able to sort of support and to be able to advocate for adults that are in a situation that is sometimes surprising for them, sometimes frightening, sometimes, you know, a situation they never expect themselves to be in. So to be able to be that sort of point of contact or to be able to, you know, be a face of an organisation or a service, yeah, it's a privileged position. One, I think that's rewarding for hopefully both us and the service users that we support.
Could you talk in a bit more detail about the support that you and Jay provide?
Yeah, of course. So on a sort of basic level, we provide a mental health assessment to any adults that have found themselves homeless. But alongside that, we also support the other sort of third sectors and the sort of voluntary services alongside, who work alongside us. So we're there as sort of experts in a field, really, for people to ask questions of, for people to understand better what mental health is and what it looks like, sort of symptoms and treatments, and how that sort of feeds into someone's sort of homeless journey, really, from the point of being sort of verified, notified as being homeless, to the point of being sort of trying to support people back into accommodation. Over within Telford, we also offer support for the council and the housing officers. So anybody that's in tenancies, but whose tenancy might be sort of volatile, or if a housing officer has a concern, we also go in and see people within their own homes, offer that chance to have that assessment. And if things need to be referred into sort of secondary services or sort of signposted to other appropriate sort of help, that's one of the things we can do.
And Jade, I understand that extends to providing training for partners as well, in terms of helping them to understand the issues that you and Mike would identify. Could just talk a little bit about that, please?
Yeah, it does. I mean, obviously, as Mike said, we kind of work with partnership agencies, and I've recently completed training for a charity that's called the Shrewsbury Arc, which is in Shrewsbury, and it provides a kind of day centre for homeless or vulnerable people to attend. So a lot of the staff based there are volunteers. Some of them are paid workers. They have no kind of necessary experience with mental health or no kinds of understanding around it. So recently I've carried out training for them just in regards to diagnosis, what that person can present like, and also what support they could have. And it enables them to give more of a streamlined service if somebody comes in and they feel that they're not particularly presenting mentally well. They know to contact me, but they can also kind of signpost and discuss the symptoms that they're witnessing with other agencies if needed as well. So that's kind of given them a bit of background information into it. And it seems to be working really well. We're hoping to do more training with different agencies also as time goes on, just to provide that bit of awareness. And I think obviously with people sleeping rough, there are police involvement. So I think we will look into providing them with some training around it also, just to give them a bit of understanding as well that some people that are homeless may take drugs and alcohol, which may again mean they present in different ways. And it's working, I guess, with people rather than against them. So as the police are kind of known at instances to work against people, we try and encourage them to work with and just help people that are rough sleeping rather than see they can be seen as an issue. And I think it's giving that education around it to say, actually, there's a reason why this person could be presenting that way. They may have come from a traumatic background. They might be fleeing from something that's traumatic. Just hopefully giving people that more insight into people's circumstances and why they might be the way they are.
So we talked there in a bit more generic terms about what you do as a service. I'd like to be a bit more specific now, if that's okay, to talk about some examples that you and Mike have experienced in helping people. For example, I know that you've carried out mental health assessments in some unusual places, for example, park benches or supermarkets, cafes, and et cetera. So I imagine that from that perspective, the service takes you where it needs to go in terms of order to help the people you need to help.
It does, definitely, yes. I guess we are more of an outreach service in that we go to people where they're needed, whereas I guess previously in mental health services, it's been a lot of people attend an appointment and they have to kind of engage with that service, whereas we encourage people to engage with us because they are identified to need it. So, yeah, we travel wherever we need to see that person. We've got to remember they're the ones who are most in need and we can't really expect them to come to us. So if we can go to them again, we're building that good relationship with them. They're not necessarily seeing it as boundaried and we provide support wherever we can for people.
And Mike, is there anybody that comes to mind for you? I appreciate not naming any names here, but of an example that sort of sticks out in your mind about how the support that you've provided has helped to make a difference.
Yeah, so there's a number really, and it sort of spreads across the range of work we do. So occasionally we will come across people whose mental health need is so significant that in actual fact that the homeless treatment and accommodation side will have to come secondary to that, being a sort of touch point for a number of sort of services are able to escalate that sort of situation because if people need the hospital treatment to sort of minimise distress or to restart treatment, that's always a success, really. In terms of accommodation, like sort of Jade was alluding to, we will go out and we will create that first contact, whether it's out on a field or out in the community or, you know, just sort of knocking on somebody's tent to put a face to a service, let them know that we're not here to do anything dramatic or to sort of take anything away from them. But there is, you know, support, there is lots of sort of things we can do. And then to be a sort of a face at the other end when they have accepted the support and help and to come into accommodation. So we've done that on a number of occasions for adults who sort of find navigating sort of services difficult. So if there's autism or sort of Asperger's or some sort of concerns around paranoia or mistrust, to be able to put those sort of initial bits of sort of hard work in to see them where they are can be the difference between accepting help and letting other services in or shutting people out. So yeah, there's been a number of occasions where I think the effort we've put in at the start has made a difference towards the end.
And what would you say the percentages of individuals you come across who are sort of currently known to mental health services in Shropshire and Telford and Wrekin? Is it higher than you would anticipate?
So I did a little bit of research about this within the first year of the project starting, and it was roughly a 75-25% split, if I remember correctly, of for people that either weren't known services or they'd had a little bit of contact but hadn't had anything sort of any significance for a long time. I'd say the majority of people we see either aren't known, or if they have been known, it's been a long time ago.
Right, I understand. So, and then sort of moving on from the sort of the support you provide to, I guess, to the impact it makes. So Jade, I'll come to you first on this. So in terms of the impact that's been on the people you support, could you sort of talk in any sort of either generalities or sort of examples of how what you've done has helped an individual and how, you know, in terms of their journey? And then how the partnership aspects of the work, talked a little bit about that earlier, but how the partnership aspects of the work has made a difference locally.
Yeah, I guess for everybody that we see, obviously we complete a mental health assessment, which identifies needs. That's the kind of first point of call we have with somebody. It will then go to kind of partnership agencies. We will feed back. So for instance, I've recently saw a guy and he was sleeping rough. Obviously, it was very distressing for him. It was traumatic. He'd had previous trauma in his life. The route for him to go down was psychology. However, for a psychologist to be able to begin work with them, it can be quite difficult when somebody's on the street, having nowhere to kind of meet up. You can't really do psychology on a park bench. So I was able to kind of identify needs in that way, feed that back to the rest of the service, who also got involved. He had experienced domestic abuse in his past relationship. And luckily, the team that I work within has a domestic abuse worker. So she was able to see him also. We got him into a refuge where he continues to be now. And he has given such positive feedback about the whole experience that he's had. So now he's in a kind of stable base. He's able to have that psychology and address the needs and address his previous trauma that he was having. And now we still keep in contact. Obviously, he's close to us now because he's no longer rough sleeping. His refuge that he's in is going to be hopefully more permanent for him. He's now looking at work, and that is all he wanted to do. He didn't want to be on the streets. He wanted to kind of work and live a kind of normal life, as we say. So the feedback he has given the whole team has been nothing but positive. And for our involvement, he's been able to, like I say, move on with his life, get off the streets, have all the needs and every service that he needed for him at that point. And now he's thriving. So it's really good. It's really good to be able to see that and the positive effect it's had on somebody.
And I guess that ties up quite nicely to the last question I was going to ask you, which was in terms of that kind of outcome must be extremely rewarding for both of you in terms of being able to make a real difference to someone's life. So my final question is going to be sort of what continues to motivate you in terms of doing this kind of work? Because I'm sure at times it can be quite tough. And Michael, come to you first on that. In terms of what do you feel, how you feel this motivation, so the difference you feel it makes to you as a mental health nurse?
I think, yeah, it does make a difference. It sort of humanises what is a very sort of large and sort of nationwide concern. And in terms of sort of what motivates, it's an ever-changing situation. There's sort of differences in seasons, there's differences politically, and we end up seeing the stark reality of that on the street and through the referrals that we get. But knowing that the differences that we can make, knowing that the links and the ability to sort of escalate or the ability to sort of refer into the right services to get people the correct treatment to minimise the distress or the impact on someone's mental health or physical health or just general life stress is, I think one of the reasons you sort of get up and sort of do the job each day.
And Jade, what would you add to that?
I think if anything, it's made me feel grateful for everything that I have. And I guess, like I said earlier, it's remembering that it can potentially happen to any of us. And the referrals we get are forever increasing. There's people being evicted from houses most days. So it's that awareness that this could happen to me. It could happen to my family. It could happen to anybody that you know. So to be able to provide that kind of help and support to these people and whoever else who comes up in the future is such a privilege to do.
That's a nice inspirational way to finish, I think. So thank you very much both to Mike and Jay for joining today. That's it for this edition of the MPFT podcast. You can subscribe and listen to previous episodes by searching for the MPFT podcast by the usual platforms. Huge thanks again to Mike and Jay for joining us, and thank you also for listening. Bye-bye.